Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithsimmery.com. Welcome to Sex with Simmery. This is Dr. Timmery, and this is an extra special, awesome field trip episode through the power of your imagination and also the internet and recording devices. You are now transported to Toronto, Canada, in April of 2014. So I'm at the Feminist Porn Conference, which is connected to the Feminist Porn Awards, taking place at the University of Toronto. So today I'm going to be presenting on a panel of people who are talking about battlegrounds where feminist porn, well, porn in general, is being debated. I'm specifically talking about Tumblr and how there are both anti-porn feminist communities and also feminist porn existing in the same social platform where there's also just, it's kind of a wild west as far as like porn images go. So that's what I'm talking about. And I'm going to be chatting with a whole lot of other folks. Hopefully we get some pretty crazy, interesting interviews. So just hold tight for this special field trip episode at the Feminist Porn Conference 2014. So I have arrived at the Feminist Porn Conference at the University of Toronto. It is a kind of windy, cold, awful gray day, which I think is probably just, you know, whatever. You know, because I left Philadelphia, it was nice, so that's just what I get for leaving. Anyway, Toronto so far, beautiful. I'm kind of creeped out at how little trash there is on the ground. So that's the only weird thing. Other than that, the television shows seem much more informative than in America. That's been the big difference. And my Starbucks cost like $2, so that was nice. So the conference itself, so far, it's very cool. You could tell everybody who was going to be coming here. I was like, if I have difficulty finding the building, I will look for someone with dyed hair. And sure enough, that's pretty much how it's been working. Basically, like, everybody that you'd want to be friends with. That's the way I felt about it anyway, is that all of these people would be folks that I would want to approach if I was, you know, just in regular life. So I am presenting it a little bit with a few different people. Again, I'm going to be presenting on Tumblr, but the session itself is about battlegrounds for pornography. So Kevin Heffernan is one of the people he's going to be presenting, and I just met him. He told me ahead of time I'll be the tall guy, which is true. He's definitely one of the tallest ones here. Zahara Stardust, who is a porn star, is going to be presenting alongside as well. So this should be very interesting. I'm excited. The energy here is, you know, it's chill, but it's also very excited because it hasn't started yet and nobody knows what's going to happen. And there's free Wi-Fi, so that's nice. So I'm a little bit nervous, so I'm going to check back into you when I'm done, when I'm less frenetic. So wish me luck. So I just finished up the first session where I presented, and it went pretty well. So I'm just going to give you a quick rundown of the other people, the other panelists who discussed in it. So this is basically boiling down in a couple minutes what happened over the course of an hour and a half. So first, Kevin Heffernan presented on Not Your Average Girl, Long Jean Silver, and the Monopede Mania. So this was about Long Jean Silver, a porn star from the 70s who had an amputation, I guess just around the knee. So her residual limb, which she called her stump, was often featured in her porn. So this was something that was really fascinating because he showed scenes from this specific film, Not Your Average Girl, and showed how her pornography and also the existence of her residual limb in the scene was really interesting in the way that it connected to lots of other different types of pornography. So sometimes it was featured just sort of like in tandem with the erect penis of a male performer. So even though, you know, she might be having vaginal intercourse with a male performer, her stump was visible in conjunction with it, which is just an interesting thing. She also used it to penetrate both male and female partners, which has a really interesting connection to, you know, like female-bodied people, but being able to penetrate a man and how taboo that often is in porn, yet, you know, there are a lot of men who find that idea incredibly arousing. in addition to the people who might just be fetishizing the fact that she has a residual limb. So there are lots of different ways in which she was featured in this porn, but practically we have a lot of questions about whether or not it was exploitative or sort of celebrating her diverse appearance. She also was featured in Penthouse, and there were lots of Penthouse letters about having sex with women with residual limbs. And this is not only interesting in and of itself, but it was in tandem with the fact, again, this was the 70s, with a lot of stories in Hustler, Penthouse, etc., about returning veterans who themselves were missing limbs. So it's interesting, because are we eroticizing this thing that is happening in real life, or was this, you know, in conjunction showing how we are exploitative of a thing that is not inherently sexual? So just a lot more questions as a result of that session than answers. The next one was by KT Torrey, who's from Virginia Tech. And hers had to do with Dirty Girl Ministries. It was called Hot Blooded Chicken Sea. Dirty Girl Ministries is for Christian-identified women who are addicted to porn or masturbation. This is sort of an offshoot of purity culture. Of course, in the idea of purity culture, these women have already failed because they have masturbated and looked at porn, but they're going to do their best from here on out. So it's sort of like an Alcoholics Anonymous online for people who are obsessed with, or perhaps have even just consumed porn, really is ultimately the question. So this was a really interesting part of the session, because the choices made by the Dirty Girls Ministry, and of course also by the podcast and the book, The Dirty Girls Come Clean, these different things that these women can consume as a way to break free of their addiction, I guess, utilizes the terminology of porn culture. And in fact, their idea is that, you know, people looking for porn will come across them, which is who they need to reach. But at the same time, the whole idea is just still reinforcing that idea that you were naughty and you're going to be punished, and now you're going to do the thing that makes, you know, the big guy happy. So it's really, really interesting. And they advertise that they have over 2,000 women in their community, which to me is like not that big of a number, but it's still, I think, probably surprising that that many Christian-identified women are having a problem with porn to the degree that they need to seek help in this way. So, I don't know, just a lot of really interesting rhetoric, a lot of choice in words, discussions about that. The next performer was Zara Stardust, who last night won Sweetheart of the Year, I believe, at the Feminist Porn Awards. And she was talking about Australian law around porn. It was called Fisting is Not Permitted. She discussed the different ranking systems for the films, the rating systems, I should say. They range from G, PG, M, M15, R, which is 18 and plus, X, which is 18 and plus, and then refused to label RC, which they would not call themselves censors, but effectively censors that film. There's a lot of very strict rules in Australia about pornography. No depictions of violence, which includes for them no bondage, no body piercings, no golden showers, and you can't appear to be under 18. Even if you are over 18, you can't do the whole schoolgirl outfit pigtails thing, because that would appear to be under 18. And this thing about golden showers is interesting, because it means that no female ejaculation is visible. Now, female ejaculate is not urine, but to someone who doesn't know anything, it looks like it. So it is not allowed for that reason, because it's considered a kink that is not okay. So Australian law about porn is incredibly regressive for a lot of reasons. It's also very limited in body diversity. So female labia are often censored for a more smooth look is more acceptable. And disproportionately, the laws are catering to bigger businesses. It is harder to shoot on a small budget. You can't work from your own home. A lot of kink and queerness is inherently marginalized, which makes it harder for that sex-positive, queer, kinky porn to be available. It's not illegal to engage in BDSM behaviors, but it's illegal to show it on a film in a healthy, safe way where, you know, negotiation is shown. It's not illegal to engage in a lot of these behaviors, like, you know, adult baby play, but you can't show it negotiated in a sexy and fun way. It's not illegal to have to have body piercings or to, you know, any of that sort of thing, but it's illegal to have it on porn. And the big businesses that are, you know, even the alternative idea of porn, where, you know, it's kind of like the Suicide Girls model, they don't feature trans performers. So it's very limited in its depictions of different types of beauty and sexuality, which is very problematic. And if you're hosting porn in Australia, you have to actually post it on a server outside of the country, which just makes it just more complicated, more expensive, and more difficult for amateur people to put what they want and to see what they want. So that was interesting. And then I went and I talked about Tumblr and how Tumblr has sort of a Wild West situation going on in terms of what is available. There's a lack of oversight, yet their filtering system is not super helpful, because if you have it on an adult setting, that is where, you know, adult material will not get to you. If you have that filter on, you won't be able to look up things that are tagged with gay, even if it's non-sexual, but you will be able to find some porn because the tag for it is not, you know, understood by, you know, the computer as being pornographic. And it's also completely available through general online search. So if you go to Google and you look for a particular type of porn, if your Tumblr has that, it'll show up whether you are set as adult or not. And I just talked about how anti-porn feminism exists on Tumblr, and how, in my opinion, they're misrepresenting sex-positive and feminist porn. They don't understand it. And I think that the problem is there's not enough conversation between the two sides. And I made the assertion that sex-positive feminist porn has more in common with anti-porn feminism than it does with mainstream porn, because we ultimately share the idea that women are people, that it's a good thing, and we're disagreeing on some facets, but I think that ultimately we have more in common than we do with an industry that simply is making whatever will make them the most money, and they don't necessarily have an ideological basis for it. So I am just encouraging more conversation between the two sides, more looking at each other as human beings who have a difference of opinion rather than being boogeymen or whatever. So that was session one, and I'm going to go try to talk to some people and see what happens. The session I just attended was Pornographers Without Borders. So it was speaking to a few different people who obviously make porn, and it's outside of the U.S. So there was Jennifer Lynn Bell, who lives in Amsterdam, where she directs films. Pandora Blake, who is the only person here from the U.K. And also, she, interestingly enough, makes kinky porn with a lot of spanking and that sort of thing, but no actual fucking, which changes the way that she has to deal with legality around porn. We also had Miss Naughty from Australia. So a little bit more information about Australia's crazy porn laws. They have great weather and beaches on which to film, but terrible laws. So that makes it exciting. And Ovidie, who is French, and she started in 1905 actually as an anti-sex work activist, then started seeing porn, and it turned out to be quite different than she expected it to be, and is now a producer. So we got to hear about different laws in different countries and the ideal situation for filming porn in terms of acceptance from the legal community. So some other things that we talked about in the Pornographers Without Borders session, a few facts that I found interesting. In the UK, male performers often don't get paid at all, especially the bottoms in like a BDSM scene, because so many people would pay for the experience in real life. Often the performers are not paid, and especially, you know, depending on what role they're playing. So one of the things that is interesting about Pandora Blake's work is that she does pay her male performers and pays them the same regardless of what role they're playing. She had some really excellent points about how difficult it was for her to get here and why there's less representation of some parts of the world than others, because, well, not only is it incredibly difficult to fly to Toronto and expensive, but there's a lot of rules about what you can take with you, and it's not to her advantage to bring videos because they very well may be confiscated. She may not be allowed to come here, even after paying for a ticket and everything like that. So some people are here, you know, selling their wares and, you know, vending. But it's difficult because a lot of countries, you can't do that. You can't take porn out of the country. And if they had any left over, they certainly couldn't bring it back in, which was also an issue brought up by Miss Naughty. She says that she's previously brought DVDs. She took the risk, but couldn't bring them back in. So she just left them here. That These rules are just, you know, so arbitrary and ridiculous. You're often allowed to consume porn. You're allowed to own porn in many countries, but you're not allowed to sell it. And this is really the issue, which is bizarre because capitalism, and you'd think that that would be the thing that they would actually allow. But whatever. We also discussed Ovidie, who is French, talked about how she could not screen her films in French theaters because the law says that you can't screen porn in a cinema, except an adult cinema. However, there's not been an adult cinema since 1975, so effectively criminalizing showing porn in a theater. And all of these things just sort of like come back to this like ridiculous notion that this small group of people are deciding what everybody can do based on what they think the community standards are. So it's not even based on survey data of, so we ask 100,000 people, what are you okay with? What do you think is too far? That's not even what we're basing these laws off of. We're basing them off of what we think other people think, which is actually much more conservative than in reality. So one thing that Ms. Nadi said was, you know, why should we care about community standards? Like, whose business is it when we're talking about what I watch alone in my own home? Like, who gives a shit what I am doing with myself and, like, what exists in my head? And rejecting the notion that, you know, that this is even anybody's business, much less, you know, something for government regulation. We talked about how even some very sex-positive companies, some very ethical porn makers, might still have problematic things. There was a specific company that was discussed that makes ethical porn, pays their performers well, and focuses on, you know, consent and negotiation and pleasure and does all those things. But they have incredibly rigid standards of beauty. For instance, somebody might get hired for a gig, but if they have any blemishes, if they have a zit, something like that, they might lose the gig. Things like that, and how even within, you know, the more ethical parts of the industry, there might still be some problematic things. So there's still a lot of work to be done, even in the best places. As far as ideal places to shoot porn, we discussed Amsterdam probably being a pretty ideal place, although they are, the Netherlands do try to distance themselves from that reputation of being sex and drugs, but it still is a much more hospitable place. Berlin apparently is a magical place. And has a porn film festival that's pretty ideal. So these are some places to consider if you want to go shoot some cool porn. So those were really interesting things, and we're finding that Europe is far more stuffy about sex than we might have believed. So that was a pretty big eye-opener. So I'm kind of really, 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 really excited right now. I'm going to introduce you to April Flores, who was just on a panel. How are you doing so far?
I'm good. I'm actually fighting off a cold, but other than that, I'm good. The panel was a little intense, but it's good. It's a dialogue that needs to happen, and I think through these periods of kind of like discomfort, growth can come from that.
So the panel that you were just on, what was it specifically focusing on, just as a recap for anyone who wasn't there?
Well, the official title of that panel was Sexual Consumption, Labor, and Expressions by Women of Color. So yeah, just us speaking about our work and what we think about it and society and all that stuff.
So one of the things that you mentioned early on is that you hadn't really thought about how race factored into your work in porn, that more it had to do with like body positivity and the fact that you perform, you know, showing different ideas of beauty than necessarily a lot of porn shows. So how does that intersect for you? Like, how does race and body stuff and all of that in your experience?
Well, I guess it intersects in me. You know, I haven't really been too conscious of, okay, I'm doing all of this. My work is motivated by showing a bigger body in a positive way. But I also have to start thinking about that I'm a Latina and I'm showing a Latina doing work in a more non-traditional way in porn, like a non-stereotypical way, the maid, the chola, the border crosser is what I saw when I Googled it. But yeah, I'm doing just my own work and trying to add some artistic angles to it and more of a self-expression I use it as a tool of self-expression. So I'm just doing my own thing. But yeah, I am a Latina. So that is the truth.
So one of the things that I have always noticed when I see your images are lots of bright colors. I see really effective use of lighting. It seems like a really obvious example of art and not just, you know, we're going to do this thing now and, you know, we're going to put a hard thing into a soft thing or whatever. So how do you feel about it as an art form? And do you identify as an artist?
Well, thank you for that. That's super nice of you to acknowledge. I struggle with the identifying as an artist just because I feel like I'm such a poser artist, like such a wannabe. However, I'm becoming more comfortable with calling myself that and feeling like that because I am, like I said a minute ago, I am using this medium as a form of, as a means to express myself. I've been lucky to work with people that are artists and have shot me with great lighting and beautiful scenes and settings, nice angles. So I do think that porn is and can be seen as a form of art, a medium like a canvas can also, you know, film. It is a form of film. It is a form of media. So yeah, I do think that art and porn do collide, and I want to be right there in that collision.
You talked a little bit in the session about your legacy and how you make choices on what projects you're going to be involved in because of, you know, is this something that's going to represent you well as a woman? Is this something that's going to represent you well as any other way in which you identify? What is first and foremost for you? Out of your identities, like, what do you feel like, which people do you want to reach, like, I don't even know how to ask this question. Who are the people that you most want to access with your work?
Okay, so first and foremost, who I want to access with my work is plus-size women. And then after that, maybe women in general, as a whole. And then after that, people. Because also I know that the image of a fat body being sexual and enjoying sex, it's triggering for a lot of people. A lot of people don't like that. Makes them mad, and I want those people to kind of look back and see, like, why do I not like to watch this fat girl enjoying sex, which they may or may not, whatever, it can happen or not, but just the fact that I know that it's going to be out there to maybe spark some type of thought, even if it's a negative reaction, then at least I'm doing something.
That's huge. That's a really huge, I mean, just like visibility alone is this really huge component. And seeing that, you know, there are other people that look maybe a little bit more like you or for a young person who's thinking like, I would like to be viewed as sexy and I don't get a lot of opportunities for that. So, I mean, do you feel inspirational?
Well, I hope to. That's my goal. I just realized like a few days ago that I've been doing this for 9 years. So I guess I am at a point where I can have an influence on younger people. So hopefully they do. It was interesting because one of the panelists was saying that she would Google masturbation or Google stuff. And I didn't grow up in that age where you can Google stuff. And now I guess the people a few years younger than me have access to information and knowledge online, and hopefully that I can be some type of inspiration for sure. People come up to me and say that I have inspired them, so that is always so gratifying, and that's like my favorite moments, aside from, or maybe equal to, like having an orgasm on film, is having someone come up to me and say, hey, that you've inspired me, or you make me feel better, or I appreciate your work.
So, April, if people want to find out more about you, they want to see some of your work, where can they go? What can they Google?
Okay, so you can go to my website. It's fattyd, FATTYD.com. My Twitter, my Instagram is theAprilFlores, and that's usually where I'm, you know, updating people on what I'm doing. And you can, I guess, Google or Google where to buy a movie. April Flores.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you.
So now I'm speaking to Akio Maroon, who, are you here from Toronto? I mean, you're here, you live here now, who was also just on the last panel. What brings you to this conference today?
I think for me, it's about representing Black women, queer women of color. The Feminist Porn Awards have its ninth year, and it's been very white. And I think that it's really important to show up, to make a difference. And so that's one of the reasons why I'm here and I'm presenting, because, you know, I'm a part of the panel and I wanted to also promote Grind Toronto. So I think that's really important.
Can you talk a little bit more about what Grind is?
Yeah. Grind is a sex-positive event. They're quarterly events that I host. And they are sex-positive. They're for queer and gay, bi, trans, intersex, and two-spirited folks of color who would like to come and enjoy a sex-positive space. So a few things that you'll see at the events that are different from, like, say, a sex party that you would regularly go to is sex is not mandatory. People can relax. There's normally, like, a dance environment. Everybody has to be there at a certain time, and when the doors close, there is a discussion about consent, informed consent, and there's a conversation about safer sex. And safer sex is mandatory, and informed consent is also mandatory at these events. So it's kind of an educational space as well as a safe space to enjoy the bodies of people of color.
So I'm curious about, I understand the need for representation, but I'm curious, like, what brings somebody back when it's so overwhelmingly hegemonic in so many ways. Like, someone was speaking earlier about how she used to go to porn conferences and she would be the only one who was, like, a feminist pornographer or whatever. Yes. And somebody else was talking about they would go to feminist spaces and they would be the only pornographer. And what, they would give up. They would stop going to them. What brings you back?
Because change must come and change will come. And I honestly believe in that. And I feel that the more I'm active in not only being in the space, but also inviting other people and talking to the organizers and making sure that the space is safe for my friends to come, because I won't invite my friends to come if I come here and I have a very negative experience and it's a very unsafe space. If I speak to the organizers and if they're not receptive, then I will not come back. But if they are receptive of change and I've come back and they have been changing, last year, we didn't have a panel about people of color or on the topic at all about, you know, race and feminism and sexuality and sex work. So there is changes happening. And Tristan Taramino is actually looking for people now to come on board to help her plan. So I think that also provides another opportunity, another venue for people of color to get heard and to make sure that they're on the panel or the board who are organizing this thing for next year. So I think change happens. It's slowly, it's painful, but someone has to do it. And I think that, you know, bit by bit, it will happen.
So this session seemed to me incredibly well attended. I mean, it was like, yes, you know, standing room only. There were people on the floor, like the whole thing. Do you feel like that session accomplished what you set out to accomplish?
It's not even really set out to accomplish. I think for me, I just wanted that conversation heard, and I want that conversation to be had. And I think that, you know, the questions that were asked were very poignant. Like, someone asked, you know, why are there no women of color sex workers that were on the panel? And, you know, or larger women of color. And it's really like, you know, feminist porn is very white. Feminism in general is very white. And it's a very difficult conversation to have because, yes, I would like to have women's needs and women's desires and women's empowerment forthright. However, in that, we have to understand that when that right is being asked for, where are the women of color and where are our rights and where are histories represented? And it's not in a lot of the cases. So, you know, you just got to keep at it and keep doing it and hope that the people who have privilege and have power will listen.
So this is sort of a tangent. This is a divergence from that. So what personally do you want to see more of in porn? And that can be completely separate from any of the stuff we've talked about so far.
I want to see more women of color in porn. I want to see more men of color in porn. I want to see more trans, black trans women, more black trans men. I want to see that. I want to see the sex that we're having, because we're having really steamy, really juicy sex, very nasty sex and dirty sex. And we're not showing that because, number one, historically, our colonizers called us dirty and called us inappropriate. And so it is very stigmatized to get your body out there and you know, because it feels a little bit like you're reaffirming the stereotypes. But really, we're having really good sex, and I want that sex publicized so that young women like myself, when I'm growing up, you know, they can Google and see how hot and how great sex is. Because right now, the majority of the porn, if it's not fetishized, if it's not fetishizing women of color, it's not existent. So I want to see regular, dirty, grimy sex with people of color in an orgy, just going at it. And that's just not present right now.
I want to see that too. Oh. So how can people find out more about you? How can they find out about Grindr? Where shall they Google to?
It's grindtoronto.com. That's GRINDTORONTO.com. I'm also on Twitter. It's Akio Maroon. That's AKIOMAROON. Or just look up Grind Toronto. But it's grindtoronto.com. It's not hard to find. We're also on Facebook. The Facebook group is closed, so you have to ask permission to enter. But it's also called Grind Toronto.
Apologies, I'm like so overwhelmed. I'm fangirling out a little bit right now. But thank you so much for talking to me.
Thank you. You're welcome.
So now I'm here talking with Dana Danger. So what brings you to the conference today?
Well, I'm an artist, but also on the side, I photograph and shoot for a site called CherryStems.com. And we are a Winnipeg-based community, I would say, but it is we're kind of like how do I describe it? It's essentially like a pay site that you're a part of this community, and we have different genders, different body types, and just like for the love of being naked. So yeah, that's pretty much it. And so I what brought me here is mostly getting involved with this community and looking for kind of more alternative ways of viewing and consuming porn. Feminist porn, yeah.
So you came here in terms of, like, as a consumer as much as a business person.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah, okay. Both, yeah.
Do you think, I'm getting the impression that that's true of a lot of people here, that this is, if nothing else, like, that this, if this is their career, it's still because they believe in it deeply as a passion. Like, is that true for you?
Oh, yeah, totally. Like, more so, I think, as well, like, just being really unhappy with maybe more of the mains, like the, like, for me, it was just about diversity. Like, I just really wanted to see something else than what was being fed to me for so long of, like, what porn looks like, and that I do like watching people, can I say, yeah, fuck or have sex. I don't know if you need to, like, edit. Yay, perfect. Oh, I love the internet sometimes. I can't speak for everyone, but especially like what I feel like why I kind of went to particularly this this website Cherry Stems is because like everybody that I work with is also my friend, and that we all want to see different types of content, you know, things that we can be like, yes, I identify with that, or I want to see that, I want to see something else, and I want to see different types of acts, and what does sex look like, you know, and I want to say real sex or anything like that, because that is also really problematic, but just like, you know, maybe, yeah, something that's different. Okay. Yeah, the other, you know, I want to see that.
So are there any sessions in particular that you've either found interesting thus far or looking forward to perhaps tomorrow?
I've done more of like kind of the business side of sessions today, although let me just like, look up. There was one that was hoping that, you know, which was the Love the Horror You're With, Self-Care and Allyship for Sex Workers with Tina Horn, Andre Skady, and Arabelle Raphael. That seemed really interesting. And I think what I'm really looking forward to is like the closing keynote with Courtney Trouble. Really big fan of theirs, and really like what they're doing in the community, and really they're making a lot of space. So that's really cool.
So where can people find out more about you and about your work?
So if you want to specific, like I have my own, me personally, I have a Twitter handle, which is @DanaDanger, D-A-Y-N-A-D-A-N-G-E-R, YNA Danger. But if you want to find more about Cherry Stems and like what we're trying to do, just look up cherrystems.com, and we have blogs, we have articles that are mostly kind of like free to watch. But if you really want to see like the good stuff, you know, we have really affordable sort of rates to be a part of that community. So yeah,
cool. Thank you so much for talking to me.
Yeah, thank you so much.
So the challenging session of this afternoon was definitely the sexual consumption, labor, and expressions by women of color, which turned into a really interesting conversation where the, you know, emotions were sort of running high, but it was very, very valuable and incredibly important. The panelists included Murray Miller-Young, who was Skyping in from California. She's currently undergoing some serious issues related to the fact that she was goaded into a confrontation with some anti-choice protesters and has been getting death threats and all sorts of terrible harassment since then. So she was Skyping in with us, did a fantastic job despite the medium. She talked a little bit about why it's particularly interesting and important to talk about women of color in porn, and why it is a flexible and can be lucrative form of income, much more so than a lot of the roles into which women of color are pushed: service industry, childcare, those sort of things. And she talked a little bit, this is interesting, about the appeal of the idea of fame and how porn can offer you that kind of fame. And what she meant was not necessarily just a narcissistic idea of fame, of just wanting to be known, but it's about a deep longing for visibility, access, and mobility in the culture, something that women of color are often denied. And so, you know, we talk about representations a lot of the time, and a lot of this has to do with when you are doing what you like to do, it is a role model for other people who would also like to do that, and show that people like them, people like you, can do this work, can do this thing, can fulfill whatever it is that their dream is. So talking about how important that was. Tanisha HD, she talked about the transformative power of porn to be not only a tool of arousal, but also of education about how sex works, you know, when it's done right, and when the porn is done right, I should say, and also of like self-identification, that if you see that it is possible for a Black person to also be queer, or, you know, to not always necessarily be vanilla or necessarily be the most kinky, but to just see more representations, more and more diverse ideas of what is possible, and not being limited to stereotypes of different groups, and how porn, from her vantage, you know, has this really important representation piece, and also just idea for, you know, how you view yourself and what your options are. She does not make porn or act in it. She is a student and she's a burlesque performer. And there was a little bit of a discussion about whether or not burlesque performers count as sex workers. There was a little bit of pushback on whether they should identify that way or not, whether or not they have that option. Tanisha was of the opinion that, you know, because some burlesque performers do not identify as sex workers, that distinction, you know, shouldn't necessarily be made for them, but that she believed because there is less stigma about burlesque than, say, stripping or other types of sex work, including, you know, street workers, escorts, etc., that she was acknowledging the privilege that she got from being a burlesque performer and not another type of sex worker. So there was some discussion about that and whether or not, you know, how people should identify. April Flores, who we spoke to, has, you know, changed the face of porn as far as I'm concerned. She was the first BBW to win an AVN. So that, you know, that made me happy. And she talked a lot about how her skin shade played a role in, you know, how she was treated by the world, including by her own family, and how she learned a lot about the experience of people with different and darker shades being different, how the experience can be more oppressive. And through, you know, porn, she definitely found it important that she use a Latina name as a performer to raise awareness of Latinas and their sexuality. She talked about learning about masturbation as a child and how many messages she got about masturbation being bad and God was watching you and it was terrible, and just being really confused about why would God care if I did this.
There were a lot of people on the panel who talked about how little sex education they got, and the sex messaging they received was actually very negative, if anything at all, mostly about waiting and not doing it. And Akio Maroon, who we talked to also, the founder of Grind Toronto, she told a lot of her personal story, how she came from Jamaica and moved here on her own at the age of 17, and the experience that she had before realizing that she was queer, and what brought her to her current state today. She's a single mother. She's an educator and a consultant, and what informs her work and why she's passionate about it. So much of it has to do with learning about her body and her own wishes and desires, and unlearning the patriarchy and the slave mentality and the self-hate that is perpetually imposed through outside culture. So it was a very interesting and challenging session for a lot of people, and there were some questions that perhaps brought up how do you get more people of color involved, both in terms of the conference itself and also in porn work. There was a pornographer who asked, how do I get more people of color? I've sent out casting calls and I don't get a response. And one of the things that was brought up is you need to put those casting calls out where they are, not where you are, and have to put in a couple extra steps of work on your part to build the trust and to have the relationship with someone so that they know that they can come work with you and they won't be tokenized. So this will also be about, you know, supporting people of color in their work and going to where they are and building that sort of relationship. So it really drove home the point that within feminism, there's not nearly enough diversity. Within pornography, there's obviously not nearly enough diversity. So just making an active effort to represent more viewpoints and more experiences. So we just finished the keynote. So I'm going to talk to Alex and Laura. Laura, right? Okay. Just making sure. About how you have experienced the porn conference so far, what brought you here, that sort of stuff. Who wants to go first?
I'm Laura. I'm from Philadelphia. I am a feminist artist. Previously went to Tyler School of Art. Will be transferring to Maryland Institute College of Art in Baltimore in the fall. I actually found out about the conference from Timmery. I'm a avid follower of her blog, and when I saw that she was presenting, I'm sad I didn't get to see your presentation. But yeah, there's been a lot of really wonderful things that I've seen, and there was actually some things that I thought were worth critiquing that I've seen that I thought were actually a little bit problematic. And I think that just speaks to the fact that like feminism doesn't exist in a vacuum, that there's still things that are problematic that happen in feminist spaces that need to be discussed.
So do you feel okay talking about what happened?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was nothing particularly overt, just kind of some things that I picked up on. Alex and I were going, the last presentation we went to, we were pulled between going to the presentation about sex workers and women of color and representation, and the presentation about
consent within like pornography and making sure that
ethical pornography, like the ethics of making porn, and we ended up picking that one because I thought that that presentation would kind of address issues specific to women of color, and that's something that I think is really, really crucial, especially as a radical feminist. But when we got there, I kind of felt like, you know, there was only one person of color on the panel, and
she was also the only queer member on the panel,
and she was the only person of color. The other were white women. There was one cis white man, and as individuals, they all seemed very nice. I thought that the presentation didn't really get into the meat of the issues of ethics in pornography today. And it kind of just talked about, you know, like, make sure that you talk to the producer beforehand and that you're on the same page, and give us food, like, and, like, make sure there's food provided and water, and that, like, it's warm enough or cold enough. Like, those are all very, very important things, but I think it would have been really good to hear them talk about, like, the realities of, like, consent and, like, lack of consent that can happen in pornography, and really get at the heart of the fact that, you know, a lot of the consumers and a lot of the people with power and resources in pornography are white men, and how do you navigate that space, you know, creating ethical pornography without having that kind of power.
So what brought you here, Alex?
Well, actually, my girlfriend was supposed to go with Laura, and then she realized her passport was expired, so I came instead. And, I mean, you know, it's like, I'm on this page, like, it's fun, I'm, like, happy I got to go, and it was free, but, I don't know, it's been pretty good so far. I went to one of the film screenings, and I think that was probably, like, it was, like, really, like, moving and touching, and, like, I really enjoyed it. I got to meet Jisley, that was really cool. and, yeah, also, we went to the same panel with, like, that. It was just, like, it wasn't what I was expecting it to be. Like, the description of it was a little kind of, it was a bit more vague about, like, just consent within, like, you know, the pornography films, but, like, there just wasn't that much talk about it. Like, actually, like, the consent of, like, all of the performers.
Kind of glossed over.
Yeah. But, I mean, it was still, it was interesting. It was like, an insider sort of look in, like, the porn industry, but I don't know. I'm kind of excited for more of the sessions tomorrow, because I think they get a little bit more, they seem a little bit more radical. Right now, it seems, like, a little tame. Like, I feel like a lot of, like the feminist group that we have at Temple is a lot more radical than a lot of things that we're talking about here today, which is, like, kind of, like, it's upsetting, I guess.
That's a really interesting point. I hadn't really put my finger on it, but I was kind of feeling, I definitely feel what you're saying.
A little vanilla, a little bit.
On the panel of Pornographers Without Borders, which was, like, different, you know, different countries' laws and stuff, there was, like, one person who was kinky, and she identified that she was, like, the one, like, kinky person on the panel, and that's true. I haven't seen a ton of that.
Also, they were all, like, European or Australian, I noticed. There was no representation of, like, a country that represents predominantly people of color.
You know, and I don't think I ever hear anything about that in general. And I mean, obviously, in some of these, I feel like it's because I haven't put in any effort into specifically finding it. And there also might be issues of, like, legality. Like, for instance, why there's so much more Japanese porn than Chinese porn is just the legality of filming it. But yeah, and there was some discussion also the privilege required to be able to, like, fly to Toronto for a few days.
Exactly. I was thinking that, and when I was sitting in there, like, looking at everyone there, it's like just a sea of white people, really. Like, that really is the truth of the matter.
I mean, I'm not for sure, I don't know the exact racial demographics of Toronto specifically, but I kind of imagined it to be pretty white, so, like, I'm not that surprised. I wouldn't expect there to be, like, you know, a good, like, 50-50 or anything like that, but, like, yeah, I mean, it would be nice to have more people, like, to voice in. But there seems to be a good amount of, like, not a good amount, but, like, I've seen, like, quite a, like, a large amount of, like, trans people here, and that's, like, good to see. It's, like, really nice to have, like, a feminist conference where trans people are very included, and, like, it even is stated in the book, like, make sure you respect everyone's pronouns, like, that's what we do here. If you don't like it, get out, you know. So I think that's important.
So are there any sessions in particular that you're looking forward to tomorrow?
What's the one? The one is, like, it's, like, masochism and kinky, like, kinky sex, like, do it, like, spicing up your own life or something like that. I think it's supposed to be, like, a self-help sort of class. And then another one is, like, I think it's, like, kind of, like, do-it-yourself, like, starting to make your own, like, kind of, like, BDSM porn, which I just think would be really interesting. And then, what's the last one? The last one's really cool.
I can't remember.
I don't know. It's, like, I don't remember what it was, but it sounds very cool.
I'm really looking forward to the masochism in femininity. Like, what was the woman's name that was, she touched on it a little bit about the, I guess I would imagine it would be the discussion of femininity being innately masochistic or not, and like how that relates to pornography and BDSM, and if you can truly make a conscious decision to be a masochist as a woman in a patriarchal society.
Do you want people to find out anything more about you if they want to hit you up, ask you questions?
Yeah, sure. My name's Laura Wiener. You can add me on Facebook. I make really cool art. I have a website. It's laurawienerart.weebly.com.
And I'm Alex Ruane, R-U-A-N-E. You can also add me on Facebook. That's pretty much the best way to reach me.
This interview continues in our next episode of Sex with Timmery, so be sure not to miss it. Subscribe on iTunes to Sex with Timmery so you always get the podcasts right when they come out. We here at Sex with Timmery are all about making your life, your sex life, your relationships the best they can possibly be. And one way we can help you is actually finding like-minded folks or someone who's interesting to you or wants to do similar things that you want to do. So one option, forget Tinder and just moving to the right over and over again, you can place a personal ad on the Sex with Timmery podcast and reach tens of thousands of sex-positive, smart, interesting people around the world, and for a very low price, $20. So if you are interested in posting a personal ad, you can either send us your audio or you can send the text and I can read it for you if you're a little bit scared. Email me, sexwithtimmery@gmail.com. If you like Sex with Timmery, then you should totally check out Burlesque Toy Shop. Explore the fine line between pleasure and play and power and submission with Burlesque Toy Shop's A Little Kink collection. Our sex and mischief bed bondage restraints are the perfect foray into the world of dominance and submission. Turn your bed into a bondage playground with this accessibly priced kit for only $29.99. No bedpost required. Watch your lover surrender, bound by four soft but secure Velcro cuffs attached to adjustable straps. An additional connecting strip ensures that the bed bondage restraints will fit any size bed. At Burlesque Toy Shop, we encourage you to test your boundaries safely and live out your fantasies fully. Burlesque Toy Shop provides an expertly curated collection of pleasure toys and burlesque-inspired lingerie for the discerning lady and gentleman. With 100% body-safe products, elegantly designed toys, and glycerin and paraben-free lubes, Burlesque is the toy shop you wish you had next door, but instead, it's online. Use the code TIMARE, T-I-M-A-R-E-E, for 20% off your total purchase. So again, use the code TIMARE, T-I-M-A-R-E-E, when you visit burlesquetoyshop.com. And Burlesque Toy Shop is social. So follow on Twitter at Burlesque Toys for sexy news, hot tips, giveaways, and even better discounts. Help them out for helping us out. Thank you for listening to Sex with Timmery. Sex with Timmery, the podcast, is produced by Nathan Karuna. Our opening music is by Charles Evans. Our closing music is by Hanya Lee. Be sure to check out sexwithtimmery.com, Sex with Timmery on Facebook, and tweet at me, Timmery_LEIGH. If you're a fan of the show, if you like it at all, a little bit maybe even, rate and review us on iTunes and tell your friends all about it. And thank you.
Hello, podcast fans. Adam Carolla here. I'm leading the fight against patent trolls who are threatening this medium. It's not about me. It's about the podcast you're listening to right now. If I go down, this show could be next. Visit fundanything.com/patent troll for more information on how you can keep podcasting alive. Thank you and mahalo.